Mary Jones and Her Bible, written by Mary Carter, published by Bible Truth Publishers. Preface to the original edition. This little book tells how one of the least of seeds has grown to be the greatest of trees. It was the earnest desire of the late Mr. William Coles of Dorking, who was through life a warm and liberal friend of the British and Foreign Bible Society, to learn all he could about its birth. At his suggestion, the trustees of the college at Bala generously presented Mary Jones's Bible to the library of the Bible House in London, where it may now be seen. He was very anxious that the story should be retold in a way likely to interest the young. And though he did not live to see this volume published, he did from his deathbed see and approve the draft submitted to him. A few days before his death, he wrote as follows: "The sketch came to me as a glorious finish to my aspirations. I may never see the book, but from the bright, happy land, I shall be with Christ and know all." It must not be forgotten that others besides Mr. Charles helped to found the Bible Society. The Reverend Thomas Jones, curate of Creton, deserves specially to be mentioned. He was the clergyman in Wales who is referred to in Owen's History of Society, Volume 1, page 3, as having interested himself for more than 12 years in calling attention to the dearth of the Word of God in Wales. Let due honor be done to him and to others like him, but above all, let him be praised who disposed his servants to establish an organization for distributing the bread of life to the hungry multitudes of mankind. The Bible House, December 1, 1882. Chapter 1. Mary Jones and Her Bible. It was a gusty afternoon in late autumn in the year 1792. In those days, the west coast of Wales was even wilder than it is today, and the mountains more rugged and uncultivated. Clouds swept about the craggy summit of Cader Idris, while the wind rushed down the valleys towards the sea. A little girl, barefooted, but with a shawl wrapped about her shoulders, ran out of a small cottage and crossed the plot of garden to the hen house. She had fed the chickens sometimes earlier, and had now come to shut them in their house for the night. Dusk was falling, and most of the hens had gone to roost, but one, of a perverse mood, still picked imaginary corn from the grass and kept well away from the house. "Now, Buffy," cried the little girl, "you know it's time to go to roost, and I am in a hurry. Shoo!" With a squawk, Buffy scuttled around to the back of the hen house. "Oh, dear," exclaimed the little girl, "did you ever see anything so obstinate? Very well, stay there. I'll go and get the lantern while you make up your mind." She went to a tiny tool shed and unhooked a lantern from a peg. But as soon as she was out in the windy garden, the door of the lantern blew open, and when fastened, it blew open again. "This catch is no good," murmured the child to herself. "Dear me, everything is going wrong. We shall be late, that is certain. Buffy, get inside, or I shall lock you out for the night. Shoo!" The hen, with a cackle, now rushed into the hen house as if pursued by some enemy, and she and her friends inside awoke the echoes with their cries. The little girl shut and fastened the door, and then ran out of the gate and a little way down the road to a neighbor's cottage. She knocked, and then partly opened the door and called, "Mr. Williams, would you kindly lend us your lantern tonight? The latch of ours won't keep fastened, and in this wind the light would soon blow out. Don't trouble to come out. I will get it." A man came to the door. "Why, I thought it was Mary Jones," he said. "Of course you can have the lantern, and welcome. You are going to the meeting with your mother, I suppose?" "Yes, yes. You will find it on its hook." "Thank you, Mr. Williams," called Mary as she hurried to the lean-to beside the cottage. "It's getting so dark, we shall be late." Mary ran home with the lantern to find her mother waiting, dressed in her cloak and tall hat, ready to start for the meeting. It was a poor room in which she stood, for weavers in their time were poor folk. But a cozy fire burned on the hearth, giving almost as much light as the rush candle that was stuck in a holder in the wall near the loom. A cupboard, a table, a few chairs and stools, and a bed in the corner were the only furniture, unless a kind of open crate hanging beneath the ceiling in which the bread was kept could also be called furniture. The floor was of earth, but neatly swept. "Where have you been, child?" asked the mother. "We shall certainly be late." "I had to go to Mr. Williams's and ask for his lantern, mother," answered Mary. "The latch of ours won't keep shut." "Well, we could have done without a lantern," said her mother. "Yes, but then I could not have come with you," Mary answered. "You know, if I didn't come to light you on your way, they would say at the meeting that I need not come." While she was speaking, Mary put on her shoes, lit the lantern, and threw her cloak around her shoulders. "That would never do, would it, Mary?" said her father, who was sitting by his loom. "I wish you could come too, father," said Mary, "but I suppose it would only make your cough worse. It is such a rough night." "You must tell me all you have heard and sing the hymns you have learnt when you come back," answered the father. "I will," said Mary. She kissed him, and both mother and daughter called, "Goodbye, father," as they went out into the blustering night. The way to the mission hall was rough and rather long. Mary and her mother stumbled several times, but the light of the lantern saved them from falling. "I am glad you brought the lantern, Mary," said Mrs. Jones. "It reminds me of the words of the psalm, 'Thy word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path.' That means that God's word shows us the way we should take in life." "Yes," said Mary, and walked for some little while in silence. "What a lot of lovely thoughts there are in the Bible," she said at last. "I do wish we had one, but then I couldn't read it," she added with a sigh. Mary was 8 years old, but there was no schools anywhere near the village of Llanfihangel where the Joneses family lived. "Well, you know how a great deal of the Bible for all that," answered her mother cheerfully. "Think of the Bible stories your father has told you. David and Goliath, Daniel in the lion's den, Joseph and his wicked brothers." "Yes," said Mary more brightly. "I used to cry when I was little when father told me about the wicked brothers putting poor Joseph in the pit and then selling him. But how wonderfully it all turned out. I wonder what the reading will be tonight. I hope it will be something I have not heard before. The Bible has so much in it I don't know. I always want to hear more and more." They were now in the village of Llanfihangel, and soon joined a group of people who were going into the little mission hall. Mary wiped her feet carefully at the door and put out the lantern light and walked sedately into the room behind her mother. There was a look of interest and expectancy in her face, for these weekly gatherings for Bible reading, prayer, and hymn singing were her one great pleasure. In spite of Mary's fears, they were not late, and mother and daughter came in for many friendly greetings and inquiries about Jacob Jones's health. There was Evan Evans, the shop, asking if he should call as he passed tomorrow, and was glad to hear that Jacob was not so very ill. There was David Lewis Everything, saying that he was coming up Mrs. Jones's way on Friday, and he would bring her groceries with him to save her or Mary a journey. Now it must be explained that the shop was not part of Evan Evans's name, but tacked on in this way to distinguish him from Evan Evans, the farm. The first kept the shop, the second kept a farm. So also with David Lewis Everything. He kept a little general shop, where he sold nearly everything one needed. These descriptive titles were common in Wales then, and where there were so many Evanses, Morgans, Lewises, Joneses, and so on, it must have been a splendid way of telling one from another. And this was not confined to the men only. If they had wives, they too carried the title, such as Mrs. David Morgan the blacksmith, Mrs. Williams the butcher, and so on. Amongst the company at the meeting that evening was a visitor from town, come with Mr. and Mrs. Evans the farm. He noticed Mary's bright face and her dark eyes shining with quiet excitement. "Who is the little maid, then?" he asked. "She is young to be at a meeting like this." "Oh, that is Mary Jones, a dear child," said Mrs. Evans. "She is as interested in the hymns and reading as any grown person. She never misses a meeting. In fact, a meeting without our Mary would not be the same." "Well, well," said the visitor, looking kindly at Mary. "Indeed, that is very good." The psalm was now given out, and after some ahems from a few of the old elder ones, the company swung into the refrain of the metrical version of "The Lord is my shepherd," sung, of course, in the native Welsh tongue. The little building rang with the tuneful voices, for what Welsh man or woman cannot sing? Mary's treble could be heard amongst the women's voices, for she sang with her whole heart. The Bible reading was of the Lord's transfiguration and the healing of the epileptic boy. Mary had never heard this before and sat enthralled. Neither she nor her mother spoke much on their way home, but before she went up to the little loft that was her bedroom, Mary recounted the whole story to her father, almost word for word as she had heard it. "Yes," he said, "I remember it, but I had not thought of it for some time. How I wish we had a Bible of our own, but they are too dear for us to buy, and hard to get, too." The next day the weather was calmer, and Mary went out to tidy the garden. With her usual energy she hoed and raked the weeds for some time, tossing back her thick curls when the light breeze blew them over her face, throwing odd pieces of cabbage to the fowls from time to time. Her thoughts were as busy as her hands, and after a while she stood still, leaning on her hoe, gazing up at the mountains. They were very lovely this morning, for sunshine and shadow floated over the rocky slopes as the little clouds chased each other across the sky. Towards midday, Mrs. Jones came out. She had been busy at her weaving all the morning. "Well, well, Mary dear," she cried, "are you tired? You have been working too hard. Your father has been watching you from the window, and he says that you have been standing for a long, long time as still as a statue." Mary turned to her mother with a quiet smile on her face. "No, Mother, I am not tired a bit, but I was thinking of what we heard read last night about Jesus up on the mountain and being all changed, even his clothes, white and glistening. How beautiful it must have been! No wonder Peter didn't know what to say. And I was thinking that those mountains there must be like the mountains where Jesus went. And as the sun shone in bright patches on the rocks and the grass, I could almost picture it all happening there." Mary's eyes kindled and her face shone as she spoke. "Oh, I am so glad I heard that reading last night. And then once a little mist came," she went on, "right at the top of the mountain, that was like the mist that covered them as they heard the voice from heaven. It was wonderful." "The Lord has blessed thee, Mary dear," said Mrs. Jones, much moved, "and while you keep his words in your heart, you will never lack for happiness." The next day was market day at Abergwenolan, a village 2 miles away from Llanfihangel. Mary was out feeding the fowls. She always liked to be in the garden early that day to see the folk going to market, and many had a pleasant word for her as they passed. Down the hilly road they would come, farmers' wives in tall black hats and red cloaks, sitting firmly on their stout farm ponies, baskets of eggs or butter in their laps, and perhaps a daughter or a small son behind them. They feared neither wind nor weather, and it would be, "Good day to you, Mary child," or "Are your parents well, Mary?" as they trotted by. Or it might be a youth driving some pigs or trying to do so, and Mary would laugh at the creature's antics. Today, Mrs. Evan Evans, the farm, reined in her pony at the Joneses' gate, and Mary ran to open it. "Good morning, Mary," said Mrs. Evans. "Thank you, yes, I will come in for a moment." "There, the pony will be all right with the bridle over the gatepost. I'll just have a word with your mother and father." "Good morning, Jacob. How is the cough?" "Better, I hope." "Good morning, Molly. You and Mary look none the worse for your rough walk last Monday night. Wasn't the singing fine? And I could hear Mary's little voice taking her part famously. Our good friend from Towan, Ivor Jones, was quite taken with the little maid. He said he never saw anyone, young or old, listen to the gospel so attentively." Mary flushed with shy pleasure. "I had never heard it before, Mrs. Evans," she said. "I thought it was the grandest story about Jesus I had ever heard." "We do so wish that we had a Bible of our own," said Mrs. Jones, whose name also was Mary, though she was always known as Molly. "And now that Mary is getting bigger and loves God's Word so much, she can repeat many texts that she has heard at the meetings, and some she has learnt from us. We feel the miss more and more every day, though Jacob and I do not read very well ourselves." "So there is another hard thing poor Mary has to face," said Jacob. "Do you know, Mrs. Evans, she is 8 years old, but she cannot read. How can she learn with no school anywhere in these parts?" Mary flushed again, but not with pleasure this time. "I wish I could learn," she said. "I do so want to read." "Do not be downcast, Mary," said kind Mrs. Evans. "God has given you the wish to learn and to know more of His ways, and He will make a way for you, be sure of that. But I must be getting on, or I shall be late in the market. I need more eggs. Our hens are laying badly, and I haven't enough for a customer that I have promised. Can you let me have some?" "Oh, Mary is our henwife," said Mrs. Jones, smiling. "Mary, dear, run and get what you can for Mrs. Evans." Mary hurried out and soon returned with about a dozen eggs, which Mrs. Evans paid for, and then rose to go. Mary went with her to the gate to hold her basket while she mounted the pony. "Cheer up, Mary," said Mrs. Evans. "God will open a way for you. And listen, child, when you can read and want to read the Bible, you are welcome to come to us and use our Bible whenever you wish. That is, if you like to walk 2 miles to do so." "Oh, thank you, Mrs. Evans," cried Mary. 2 miles is nothing. I would walk twice that far." "That is a promise, then," called Mrs. Evans. "Don't forget, God will make your way plain in His good time." Mrs. Evans, the farm, took the reins, and the pony trotted off. Mary stood looking after her. Then, with her good friend's words still ringing in her ears, clasped her hands together. "Oh, God," she whispered, "please make a way for me to learn and to know more of the Bible." She turned and went back into the cottage, feeling a kind of sure hopefulness that made her happy for the rest of the day. She trusted, and that was enough. And how surely God can be trusted by those who believe and wait upon His will. Far away from Mary's home, more than 25 miles away, there lies along the eastern hills of Wales the small town of Bala, a quiet little place. Its great attraction is the beautiful lake that stretches away amongst the hills. Bala stands on its shore. In a street in this town there is a pleasant house, the front level with the pavement. In a room in that house a clergyman sits at a desk, writing. The walls are lined with books. The desk is covered with neat piles of letters and other papers, for a busy man must be tidy, or time will be wasted. It may have been on that very day that Mary offered her little prayer at the gate, or not long afterwards that this busy minister was writing to a friend. "I am troubled about the district of Abergwenolan," he wrote. "There is much ignorance and bad behavior amongst the children, to say nothing of their elders. It is too far from Towan for them to attend school there. The village must have a school of its own. But how to find a true and godly man for its master? That village and district will weigh on my heart until something is done." The Reverend Thomas Charles rested his head on his hand, deep in thought. "It must be done," he murmured to himself. In those days, most of the people of the villages in Wales were unable to read. They toiled hard for their living, children as well as grown-up folk, and their Sundays were usually spent in gambling at some sport, drinking, and often fighting. The boys of a village were hardened roughs, or as we would call them now, toughs, who were a constant nuisance and danger to the neighborhood. The Reverend Thomas Charles spent his life in founding schools in these villages, and where they had been opened for some little time, a great change came over the people. The children were glad to learn. The Welsh are naturally intelligent and only needed something to occupy their minds. But funds and teachers were hard to get. That was the burden on Mr. Charles's heart. Chapter 2. The One Great Need. "Mary," called Mrs. Jones, "have you finished, dear? I can see your father coming up the road now." "Yes, Mother, just finished," Mary answered from the little outhouse where she was folding some clean clothes that she had taken from the line. "I will leave them in a basket until tomorrow," she said as she came into the living room. "We mustn't have washing about when Father comes home." Mary was now 10 years old. 2 years had passed since Mrs. Evans the farm had made her promise, a promise that was still waiting to be fulfilled, for no school had yet been opened in the district, and Mary was still unable to read. But there were not many things in the way of household work that she could not do. And while her mother and father worked at their looms, Mary washed, cooked, cleaned, and for recreation sewed and hoed in the garden. She went to the window to look for her father. "Oh, he is still a long way off," she cried. "I shall just have time to cover over the clothes to keep out the dust before he gets here." She ran out again to the outhouse, then skipped back to welcome her father. Jacob Jones walked briskly up the garden path to the cottage and came in, cheerily greeting Mary and his wife. "How have you got on, Jacob?" asked Mrs. Jones. "You don't seem tired." Jacob had been to sell their cloth at Abergwenolan, 2 miles away, and had been out nearly all day. "No," said Jacob, sitting down in his chair by the fire, "I am not a bit tired. I have sold all the cloth." Mary now spoke. "You look as if something pleasant has happened, Father. What is it?" "Isn't it pleasant that I have sold all the cloth that your mother and I have worked at so long, Mary?" asked her father, his eyes twinkling. "And that I have come home with a pocket full of money, or half full, which is as nearly as good." Mary's dark eyes sparkled, for she and her father often had fun together. She planted herself before him now. "You expected to sell the cloth, so that is nothing," she said. "But something else, something very nice, has happened. And I believe," she went on, wagging her finger at her father, "that it is something about me. Now what is it?" "Isn't our Mary a sharp lass?" said Jacob to his wife, delight beaming in his face. "Yes, child, it is about you. But it is a pleasure for us all." "Oh, come, Jacob," cried Mrs. Jones. "If you have got something good to tell us, let us hear it. We want to know." Mary was by this time leaning against her father's knee, holding the lapels of his coat. "Why, yes, wife," said Jacob. "Isn't it pleasure for us all to know that Mary may soon be able to read and write and cipher, and do all the things that you and I cannot do?" Mary sprang up and stood, her hands clasped, gazing into her father's face. "Oh, Father," she said. "Well, well," cried her mother, "is there really going to be a school opened in the district?" "There is, in Abergwenolan," answered Jacob. "Oh, Father," said Mary again, her voice hushed with the intensity of her feeling. Jacob drew her to his side again. "I knew you would be pleased, dear," he said tenderly. "Pleased," repeated Mary, "to go to school, to learn to read, to be able to read the Bible for myself. Oh, Father!"
"When is the school to be opened?" asked Mrs. Jones.
"In about 3 weeks' time," answered Jacob.
"Only 3 weeks!" exclaimed Mary in an ecstasy. Then suddenly she turned to her mother.
"Oh, Mother, I was forgetting," she said. "How can you do without me? I should be away all day. It would be leaving you all the work to do."
"Don't worry about that, dear," answered her mother. "I would not for the world keep you from that school, now that the chance has come at last. We'll manage, never fear."
"I will get up very early," said Mary, the almost stricken look that had come into her face clearing as she spoke. "I will do everything I can do before I go in the morning."
"Well, now," said her father, his eyes twinkling again, "if you can bring yourself from Abergynolyn School down to Llanfihangel for a little while, your poor father would like a bit of supper. There have I been, tramping Abergynolyn all day, planning your schooling, not tasting food since noon, and not a thought has been given to my supper here."
"Ah," laughed Mary, her usual spirits reviving after the first overwhelming joy at her hopes for the future. "You are quite wrong, Father. I have been all the afternoon making a great dish of oatcakes for you to eat with your cheese for supper, and I will have them on the table in 1 minute." They were soon, if not quite so soon as Mary had promised, sitting at the supper table, the new school being the absorbing topic of conversation.
"Did you see the school?" asked Mrs. Jones.
"Yes," answered Jacob, "but it is not yet ready, of course. I did not see the master. John Ellis is his name, and they say he is a good man and a good teacher. But I saw someone more important still, and I was glad, for I have heard so much of his good work in opening schools for poor folk like us. When I was in the school, who should come in but Mr. Charles of Bala?"
"Oh, yes, indeed," said Mrs. Jones. "He is a friend of the Welsh people. What is he like?"
"Well," answered Jacob, "I am not very good at describing people. He is tall and slender. He has a good broad forehead, and I should think he has plenty of sound knowledge behind it. There is a sort of quietness in his manner, not exactly serious, for when he smiles his whole face changes, and you see a beaming brightness, such as I have never seen in any other face, shining out. Yes, I was very glad to have had the honor of speaking to him."
"Now, before we go to bed," said Mrs. Jones, when supper was cleared away, "let us all kneel down and thank God for this wonderful blessing that has come for Mary, and pray that she may do her best with his help."
"Yes," said Mr. Jones, "but before we pray, I would like Mary to repeat some verses of the Bible that she has learned at meeting. Can you remember any of special thanksgiving, Mary dear?"
Mary thought a little while.
"I think I could repeat that piece from St. Paul's letter to the Philippians," she said at last. "And I would like to say it, because I have prayed so long and so hard that I might go to school. But I am afraid I have been very impatient at times, and I am sorry." She then repeated the verses beginning, "Be careful for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God," and finishing with St. Paul's wonderful exhortation to think only upon all things that are good. Afterward, they all knelt to give thanks and to pray for Mary in her new life, for they knew that Mary's whole life would be changed by her school. Mary went up to her little bedroom in the loft like one in a dream. Could it be possible that in 3 short weeks she would be going to school, learning to read and write? She remembered Mrs. Evans's promise. She would be able to read the Bible for herself. She sat on the edge of her bed trying to realize that it was really true. Then her usual good sense asserted itself, and she jumped up and began to undress. "I must get up early every morning," she thought.
There is such a lot to do to get ready before I go to school. Before I go to school, she repeated with a blissful smile. She knelt down beside her bed to say her own private prayers. There are some words in one of the Psalms about the Jews being so glad of something that their mouths were filled with laughter. I wish I could remember them properly, she thought. My mouth seems full of laughter for joy. O loving Heavenly Father, I do thank Thee. I do thank Thee. Help me to learn. But after all, the 3 weeks seemed as if they would never come to an end. Jacob Jones would look up from his weaving sometimes to see why Mary had stopped her sweeping of the floor before it was finished, and would see her standing, leaning on her broom, gazing out the window. "Looking towards Abergwenolen, Mary?" he would say, smiling tenderly. "It's a good 2 miles to the school." "As if that matters," Mary would answer briskly, and would ply her broom again. She spent a good deal of time mending and tidying her clothes. "I must go to school neat," she said. One evening she was busy at this needlework when her mother spoke. "Mary, dear, have you fed the fowls? They are all standing by the henhouse looking as miserable as can be." "Oh, those tiresome hens," exclaimed Mary. "They always seem to want feeding." She jumped up and ran out to throw some hasty handfuls of corn to the poor creatures, then soon hustled them into their house. "Jacob," said Mrs. Jones, "I don't know what to think about Mary. Ever since she knew about going to school, she seems to have changed. She goes about the place as if in a dream, or else, as it was just now, she grudges a moment of time taken away from her preparing for school. She doesn't help me near as much as she used to do. She says she forgets. I don't know what is going to happen, I am sure, when the school is really started. I am almost sorry we ever heard about it." "Nonsense, Molly," answered Jacob Jones. "Think what a great thing this is that has come into her life, after all the long time of wishing and waiting. It is almost pitiful to think about it. After all, she is only a child. I am glad to see that she is still a child. I had almost thought that she was too serious, a little woman before her time." "Never fear, Molly. I can trust her that when she is settled at school, she will be the same sweet, helpful Mary as ever. She is all up in the clouds just now." "Well, I hope you are right, Jacob," said Mrs. Jones. "I only wish the best for the dear child, that you well know." The 3 weeks did at last come to an end, and on Monday morning, after doing everything that could be done before breakfast, Mary set out, barefooted, with a shawl over her head and shoulders, and carrying a little packet of food for her midday meal, on her 2 mile hike to school. As she had said, 2 miles was nothing to her lithe, active body. She swung along, singing one of the old metrical psalms she had learned at meeting, her shawl slipping unheeded from her dark hair, her feet racing the little clouds that sped across the sky above her. Mary had been with her parents to the school before to be registered as a pupil, and she went straight to it now. Boys and girls of all ages from all the district stood around were gathering outside the school. Mary was a stranger to them, and they eyed her curiously, but some of the girls spoke to her. They liked her happy, friendly manner. Presently a dark-faced, healthy-looking boy came up. "What's your name?" he asked Mary. "Mary Jones," answered Mary. "Mary Jones," he repeated after her jeeringly. "Mary Patch." He had noticed a neat patch on the hem of Mary's dress. "Oh, Ivor, how rude!" exclaimed one of the other girls. Mary flushed and looked down at her dress. "I put that patch on myself," she then said pleasantly. The boy, who had wanted to irritate Mary just for fun, was surprised out of his intention by her good humor. "Did you?" he cried. "My sister can't sew as well as that, and she is nearly 14. The school bell rang at that moment, and the children all trooped into the schoolroom. Then followed the joy of new slates and pencils, and learning how to use them. The first grappling with the letters of the alphabet, hard but lovely because they were the stepping stones to real reading. Mary almost ran home. She was so eager to tell her parents all that had happened during the day and to show that she could write A, B, C, and D already. "Oh, Mother," she said after tea, "you have done the ironing. I said I would do it when I came home." "Well, well," said her mother, "you did nearly all the washing before you left home. I think my part of the bargain should be to finish it." The next morning, as Mary drew near to the schoolhouse, she heard a great noise amongst the children, loud shouts and laughter from the boys, and girls' voices too. "Oh, those boys!" exclaimed Mary to herself. They were rough and wild, mostly, and Mary secretly feared them, or she thought she did. At that moment, a great dog scurried round the street corner and raced past her. It was clutching something in its mouth. Several boys followed the boy Ivor leading, supposedly chasing the dog, but really only heading it this way and that for the sake of a little sport. They were all shouting and laughing. Mary hurried on to the school, where she found a group of girls round one of the smallest, who was crying. "What's the matter?" asked Mary. "What are you crying for, Rachel, dear?" "That dog snatched her bag that held her dinner," answered one of the girls. "Oh, poor little Rachel," cried Mary. The boys began to straggle back to the school now, still laughing at the fun they had had. "Why didn't you catch that dog?" demanded Mary. "You know you didn't try." She was vexed to see how unfeeling they were, and it made her brave. "Pooh," retorted Ivor, "of course we couldn't catch it. Rachel shouldn't be such a little silly as to let it snatch the bag."
"It was such a big dog," whimpered Rachel. "I was frightened."
"Big dog," jeered one of the boys.
"Little stupid," said another.
The school bell was being rung, and the children went in. Mary put her arm round little Rachel's shoulders, whispering something in her ear, and kissed her, at which the child's face brightened, and she went to her class quite happily. Several of the children, like Mary and little Rachel, came to school from a distance and brought their midday meal with them. "Come and sit by me, Rachel," said Mary. "See, I have plenty. We can share nicely." She gave half her bread and hard-boiled egg to Rachel, and they ate happily together. "I've got two Welsh cakes, too," she said. "I told Mother one would be enough, but she put both in. Wasn't it a good thing?" They laughed and munched the little round scones, sweet and spicy, that are baked on a hot pan, with the utmost enjoyment. "Mary Jones is giving half her dinner to Rachel," whispered one of the group of girls and boys at the other end of the schoolroom. "Yes, I saw her," said another. They drifted down the schoolroom, and soon all had joined Mary and Rachel. Mary's action had quieted them. They had been talking noisily before. One of the boys took a great red apple out of his pocket. "Like an apple?" he said casually, and handed it to Mary.
"Oh, thank you, Mansell," said Mary. "That makes a lovely finish to our dinner, doesn't it, Rachel?"
They all finished their meal sociably together, and got to know each other better than they had done before. Mary did not realize the reason, but from that day onward she was liked, and in their rough way admired by the village children. She reached the top of the class and remained there, for what the others called hard work was nothing but a delight to her. She loved it so. There was no jealousy. It seemed the right place for her. Mary Jones was different. One afternoon at the end of school, Mary was tidying away books and slates into the cupboard. She had a headache that day, and she looked forward to the walk home in the clear winter air. Presently, she became aware of a subdued sniffling at the far end of the room. She had thought that all the children had gone, so she walked down the dim schoolroom to see what was the matter. A small boy was sitting at his desk, an arithmetic book open before him, and a very much smudged slate at his elbow. He was rubbing his tears away with the sleeve of his coat.
"Why, Robbie, dear," said Mary, "what is the matter? Can't you do your sum?"
"Mr. Ellis said I wasted my time in school," sobbed Robbie, "and that I must stay in and do my sum before I go home. I don't know how to do it."
"I expect you didn't listen carefully enough when Mr. Ellis explained it," answered Mary gently. "Never mind. Let me see if I can help you. I mustn't do it for you. That would be like cheating." She fetched a damp rag and washed the slate, rubbing the pencil to a point, and took up the book. By this time, Robbie had left off crying. Hope was dawning. "Now," said Mary cheerfully, "I will copy out the sum again." She did so in plain, if not very elegant, figures, and I will show you what to do. Robbie really worked now, and in a few minutes the sum was done. Mary and Robbie parted at the school door.
"Goodbye, Mary, and thank you," the little boy said shyly, "and I hope your headache will be better tomorrow."
"How did you know I had a headache?" asked Mary in surprise.
"Because you held your head once when you thought I wasn't looking," said Robbie, smiling knowingly.
"Oh, it will be all right tomorrow. Thank you, Robbie," said Mary. "Good night." The little boy's sympathy cheered Mary, and she sped blithely home through the frosty air. It was lovely not only to learn for oneself, but to be able to help others. And how different the boys were since the school had been opened. So much quieter and better behaved. They needed teaching, that was all. It was about this time that one afternoon, just before school was closed, the schoolmaster told the scholars to put aside their books, for he had something important to tell them. "You are all doing well with your lessons," he said, "and I wish to open a Sunday school for you. Kind friends here have promised to help me in the classes. Ask your parents' permission, and God willing, we will have a morning Sunday school every week, beginning next Sunday." Mary went home in delight. "Won't it be lovely?" she said. "Just Bible lessons only. I am longing for next Sunday."
This Reformation audio track is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. SWRB makes thousands of classic Reformation resources available, free and for sale, in audio, video, and printed formats. Our many free resources, as well as our complete mail-order catalog, containing thousands of classic and contemporary Puritan and Reform books, tapes, and videos at great discounts, is on the web at www.swrb.com. We can also be reached by email at swrb@swrb.com, by phone at 780-450-3730, by fax at 780-468-1096, or by mail at 4710-37A Avenue, Edmonton, that's EDMONTON, Alberta, abbreviated capital A, capital B, Canada, T6L3T5. You may also request a free printed catalog. And remember that John Calvin, in defending the Reformation's regulative principle of worship, or what is sometimes called the scriptural law of worship, commenting on the words of God, "which I commanded them not, neither came into my heart," from his commentary on Jeremiah 7:31, writes, "God here cuts off from men every occasion for making evasions, since he condemns by this one phrase, 'I have not commanded them,' whatever the Jews devised. There is then no other argument needed to condemn superstitions than that they are not commanded by God. For when men allow themselves to worship God according to their own fancies, and attend not to his commands, they pervert true religion. And if this principle is adopted by the papists, all those fictitious modes of worship in which they absurdly exercise themselves would fall to the ground. It is indeed a horrible thing for the papists to seek to discharge their duties towards God by performing their own superstitions. There is an immense number of them, as it is well known, and as it manifestly appears. Were they to admit this principle, that we cannot rightly worship God except by obeying his word, they would be delivered from their deep abyss of error. The prophet's words, then, are very important when he says that God had commanded no such thing and that it never came to his mind, as though he had said that men assume too much wisdom when they devise what he never required, nay, what he never knew.